Sweat Technique.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Right, getting into some of the Yiner Diaz, what do you make of Yiner Diaz's season so far? How would you describe Yiner's season to this point? 713-780-ESPN. I think Yiner Diaz is actually a victim of his own bar that he set last year. Like, played in 104 games, hit .282, 846 OPS, hit 23 home runs as a rookie, expected him to take the position, hit 25, 30 home runs this year, and be one of the better offensive catchers in all of baseball. Because that was the standard, we look at Yiner Diaz in 2024 as having a disappointing season. But whenever you stack up Yiner Diaz to the rest of the catchers in baseball, it's kind of middle of the pack. It's pretty average. There's 28 catchers in baseball who've had 100 plate appearances this year or more. 100 plate appearances or more this year. Yiner ranks 13th in average, middle of the pack, 20th in on-base percentage, below average, 18th in OPS, slightly below average, 19th in defense, slightly below average, and he's 21st in WAR. So, like, that's not phenomenal, but is it like this disastrous, awful, oh my gosh, what a terrible first year backstop for the Houston Astros? For a guy that's playing in his first year as the primary catcher, I know he was a rookie last year, but he wasn't the primary catcher. First year as a primary catcher, it's okay. Like, it's not great, but why isn't it great? It's not great because we anticipated more from Yiner Diaz. And why did we anticipate more from Yiner Diaz? Because of the bar he set for himself.
Right. You wanted Atlee Rutschman because of the fact that as a rookie, he put up numbers that were in the ballpark of Atlee Rutschman when Atlee Rutschman as a catcher won Rookie of the Year. And it's probably very unfair to put any of that on him when we talk about what we talked about last segment and all he had to go through. He's better than Maldonado no matter what. When you look at it, I believe that offensively, I feel pretty confident he's going to have a better average and put up better numbers than Maldi did. And I believe he'll reach double digits in home runs. I believe that he's better than Maldonado. He didn't pull a Bregman yet. He's not sitting there around the Mendoza line or flirting with the Cologne line like in the case of Abreu. He's been better than those two guys. He hasn't met expectations, but it's almost like, was it fair to set the bar that high? Because it's the same thing when we talked about Peña coming off the postseason when he got the MVP of the World Series and the MVP of the ALCS. All of a sudden, the fans' expectations are, well, that's just something he can maintain. He can sustain that level for that long a time and do it for the rest of his career, but particularly do it the following season. He has so much on his plate, and obviously with the team starting slow and with so many people already kind of having a hot button of Martin Maldonado and all the extras that he did and the scouting and all the ways that he got his pitchers ready and the way he was able to control his pitchers and settle them down. That's a lot for anybody to take on, but to take on and have those expectations because this team's a World Series team, and then when they start struggling, everybody's going to start looking at him even harder. He got off to a good start, but then we started seeing Fromber unravel. Then we started seeing some of the things he had to deal with and realized it's a lot in that small sample, that small game summary to expect that much out of him and expect that he's going to be putting up these massive offensive numbers.
Now, I think that he might be a first baseman long-term because I think catching has kind of affected his offense, which is weird because last year he was much better when he caught than when he DH'd. So does that correlate at all? I don't like the comparing him to like other bad players because it's like, cool, you're better than bad players. What does that mean? Like saying he's better than Bregman so far, so what? Like, who cares that he's better than Bregman? Comparing him to Maldonado, who cares? Why does that matter? I don't understand how that factors in. So I don't like that argument.
I just think that he was supposed to be people were expecting the high expectations of being the next guy that's going to be filling the shoes of a guy like Bregman, a foundational piece. And so immediately he's going to have offensive numbers and just keep on rolling. We forget Bregman started slow when he played regularly the first time that he was brought up. So that in using him, I used it because of that. In using Maldi, because we all said he was a black hole at the end of the lineup that was an instant out that was not going to do anything. And now suddenly, and I was one of those guys that said, hey, you're going to be significantly better because the catcher position is going to give you so much more offensively. He's hitting .265. He's not hitting peanuts. But because of what he did last year in limited time, the expectation was when he gets regular time, instead of kind of maybe contemplating how much he may struggle with all the added responsibilities and stresses that are going to come with it, we just figured more at-bats means more home runs and more batting, better batting average and more RBIs and all those things. And fair or not, he was going to be an upgrade from Martin Maldonado.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't like the comparison of Martin Maldonado. Like Maldonado's not on this team. I don't know why you would compare
from year
him
to year. I'm comparing him because last year playing behind him, everybody said he should have been starting and playing.
Sure.
Regularly.
I just don't feel like that's a debate that should be had. Like I don't understand the let's compare Yiner and Martin Maldonado. Like that's not a 2024 conversation.
We're seeing it.
It was a 2000, but I think it's dumb. Really? I think it's a dumb debate. Like, he's not on this team. Why would we compare Yiner to Martin Maldonado in 2024?
Because more so than that, sense. We're comparing the catcher position and saying...
Well, then look at the entire catcher position. Look at every catcher in baseball then. Like, why would we compare him to the worst offensive catcher? We should be comparing him relative to the position as a whole.
Right.
Not just the worst one because he happened to play here last year.
No, but I'm saying... From year to year, and the reason why people are looking at him and wondering, does he suck, and asking questions and scrutinizing him more are these variables. And one of them is the expectation was he was going to be this massive improvement.
But that has nothing to do with Moldy. That's not why people were bullish on Yiner Diaz.
They were
bullish on him because he had an incredible rookie year offensively. It had nothing to do with Martin Maldonado.
I understand that, but it set unfair expectations of that right out of the chute.
But not versus Moldy. Like versus his own bar that he set versus the standard that Yiner created. If Yiner Diaz hit 255 last year with a 655 OPS like he currently has, we wouldn't have the expectation that he would hit 25 to 30 home runs in his first full year behind the dish. It has nothing to do with Maldonado.
I get that, but it still does because of the fact that regardless of what he does or doesn't do, the expectation is that he was going to be the same guy that he was last year, only better and more so of it because he was going to play on a regular basis. And then the scrutiny was going to come. And because the scrutiny's come, because this team also got off to a very slow start and was struggling mightily, he was firmly in the crosshairs as one of those guys that's underperforming and underachieving. And they forget the fact that he was hitting 300 when a lot of guys weren't to start the season and they were settling in too.
2585, bro, chill. He's just saying he's better than Maldonado. 8565, Branham, chill, man. I just hate the debate that we're still having with Yiner and Martin Maldonado. Like, it's icky to me. It grosses me out. I can't stand it. Well, at least he's better than Maldy. Cool. Every catcher in baseball is better than Maldy. Like, I don't know how that's relevant, is my point. Like, I just don't get how that's relevant. 9501, I'm with Blankers on this one. Maybe I'm just off my rocker when it comes to this. I get triggered by the debate of Yiner Diaz and Martin Maldonado. I don't know how it's relevant. And someone explain that to me. 713-780-ESPN. We mentioned earlier, didn't get to it because of the Nico Collins breaking news. What are the pitching options if Javier and Urquidy are toast? You mentioned you're cash it or trash it. Hey, maybe it's a trade for a guy. Here are the internal options that I wrote down today. Lauer, the guy that you signed from Milwaukee, I think he would be in line to get a start if you needed a start, assuming that Christian Javier is significant. Now, you do have five off days in June. I think you can get by with a five-man rotation. We saw Blair Henley. I don't know if I want to see more Blair Henley.
Say, Lauer gives you a better option than having to see Blair Henley.
Now, yeah. I think Blair Henley's like the what league did the Space Cowboys play? The Pacific Coast League,
yep,
PCL?
PCL.
He's the PCL pitcher of the week.
Oh, really?
He went. I think he went six shutout innings, gave up one hit. Yeah, so but he's also been incredibly meh in the PCL with Sugar Land. That was just his best start of it. I'm probably out on Henley. This AJ Blue Ball guy, he's pretty stinking good. His numbers are good, but he hasn't pitched a whole lot in Triple A. He's got like 35 innings this year. I think he's more long term. Yeah, it's Blubaugh. How would you pronounce that?
Oh, I thought you had an L on the end. Blue Ball.
No, I mean
it's a little different. It came out sounding a little different.
Blue Ball.
Okay.
I mean, how would you pronounce Blubaugh?
No, I'm saying now when you're putting
AJ Blue Ball.
You're accenting the syllables and pronouncing it better than when I first came out of your mouth. I was like, wait, who?
I think he's more of a long-term option. Like, I don't see him making a spot start because that means you're starting his clock. You're putting him on the 40-man. He's not currently on the 40-man. I think he's more long-term, mm-hmm. Like if you needed a series of starts as opposed to a spot start. There's a couple of external options. Zach Greinke, he's a free agent.
I heard he... Would he say something about bowling or something or golf wasn't as easy as he thought it was, so he started pitching again?
Yeah. I mean, he was awful last year. I think it'd be entertaining, but
oh man,
he's not going to really help you win. And then, Brandon Beilig got DFA'd by Oakland.
Oh, really? Already?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't hate having
him
back.
Well, I mean, at least there's a guy that's been there, done that, and actually has, when he's gotten those spot starts in the past, he hasn't been awful. He's kept you in games. He's done enough. Again, it gives you a better option than going back to a guy and going back to the well that was absolutely hell when they threw him in a very tough situation to start. You have to try and figure, J.P. France ain't walking through that door this year. It doesn't look like you're going to find the next J.P. France either. So you got to figure out what your options are. There was someone else that I had heard that was still a veteran pitcher that was out there that hadn't signed. And I got to remember where I was reading the article or which one of the baseball writers was reporting on it. Because at this point, what does it hurt you to kick the tires on whoever's out there? Because you have to be prepared for what possibly is coming, which is that Garcia and McCullers aren't going to be back when they're supposed to be and or maybe aren't going to be back at all. That the worst case scenario could possibly face you with one, if not both, of Urquidy and Javier. Obviously, we don't want that to happen, but you have to be prepared for it just in case it does. And with the hot and cold starts that you've gotten from some of the guys that you relied on heavily to start the season, i.e. Hunter Brown, now as much as Dana Brown talked about Arrigetti, he's better. Can he consistently do that?
Yeah. 8835 says Zoda Rizzi season. Over easy. Bring him home.
That's someone that teams were looking.
Is he healthy?
He is healthy. He worked out for teams, but did he sign with somebody? He had worked out like a month ago or so for a multiple team.
I don't think he's picked up by anybody. I just Googled his name. It says that he signed a minor league deal to rejoin the Rays on March 15th, but then a month ago he was released.
Yeah, and then he set up like a private workout for teams that to show that he could still pitch. I just didn't know if he had signed a minor league deal.
I mean, why not sign him to a minor league deal?
I mean, you could do a lot worse, but how he gets emotional and whiny. But this is at least he's not in a position of power this time. He's not coming back out of the rotation and then being put back in. Yeah, I mean, look, you could do a lot worse. That's what I'm saying. If there's a veteran guy you kick the tires on, try him out. See what he's got.
I mean, I would at least go to the tryout. See if he's got the velo. See if he's got the movement. Get the track man on him. See if he's still got it. If they weren't at his tryout, that they're not turning over every stone. I would assume that they're at his tryout. And if he hasn't signed with anybody, it probably means he doesn't have it anymore. Mm-hmm. 7869 says Madison Bumgarner. Come on,
man. No, I think that ship has clearly sailed.
Come on.
He's farming now, right?
Is he?
He's a big farm guy.
I know he probably lives on a ranch with a tractor.
Yeah.
He's probably enjoying life. Remember Vince Scully had that story about how he killed the snake. Yeah, there was I was reading something, and Vince Scully was like, there was this big article about Vince Scully calling a Madison Bumgarner game, and he was talking about how he killed a snake, and it was really weird,
really?
Like really bizarre. And everybody was wondering, how did Vince Scully learn this? And Vince Scully said that he was like reading some outdoor magazine as he was waiting for his dentist, and they were talking about Bumgarner, and Scully would used to cut out clips like of magazines because he's so old school on newspapers,
and
he would have this huge book on Major League Baseball players that he would go to with his prep. So he would cut out magazine, newspaper clippings, and then have like a file on each player that had his old magazine. And that's where he got it. It was some like old hunting and, fishing magazine that he was reading that no other broadcaster would read because he was at the dentist and picked it up.
That is vintage Jim Foley.
I imagine.
Jim Foley has file cabinets full, and I can't tell you how many times through the years I'll get a handwritten envelope in the mail, and it'll be a cut and pasted newspaper article or something that he read in a magazine that he tapes to a piece of copy paper and says, you have to read this.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool. Like they're Google machine before there was a Google machine.
Well, that's why Foley's got a mind like a steel trap.
I appreciate that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
713-780-ESPN. Which Texans receiver is most likely to disappoint? I promise we already had this planned. I promise you we already had this planned. Which Texan receiver most likely to disappoint this year? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN. Somebody said Trevor Bauer. Delete your account. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, talk about someone that can make sure that they take care of you when your hair has gone south and you don't think it's coming back. It's Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at both the NeoGraft procedure and PRP treatments, which can either maintain and sustain the hair that you have, or in the case of too far gone and you're already bald, Doc has the NeoGraft procedure, which actually is like when thinking about it in lawn in common terms and doing your lawn, taking sod from an area in the backyard where you got a ton of grass and putting it where you've got a bare spot or two in the front. It's absolutely fantastic. I didn't know anything about it till Doc called me one day and said, hey, man, would you mind sitting down with me? I want to explain something to you, see if you're interested. He explained the NeoGraft procedure to me. I could not have been more interested when he got done explaining it because I never knew that genetically, no matter how bald or thinning you get in certain areas of your scalp, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head because genetically it just ain't going anywhere. And when I started thinking about my friends that had gone bald, It's true. They have to shave the sides and the back of their head. So then we explained how he takes some of that, repurposes it where you need it, and that instantly you can see the follicles there, and they're growing. They're going to stay. He said 95 to 99% of those follicles are going to be with you for the rest of your life because they're coming from a place where they never go away. And because of the fact that he's putting them where you need them, it's going to be unbelievable with the results. Then when I did the procedure, saw the results, and in 6 to 9 months when I saw the full results, I could not be happier with the procedure, and I'm telling you, you should check it out too. As a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get a free consultation with Doc and his staff to see if it might be right for you without even taking a single cent out of your wallet or signing anything on the dotted line. It's just no commitment. You ask questions, get answers. They explain the procedure. You see if you're interested in it. If you are and you do it, I could not tell you any more than I already tell you that he is the best in the business and they are going to treat you right and do the procedure the right way. They did my procedure, could not be happier. My wife, my in-laws, my friends, my family, everybody has noticed it and said, even when I go to work functions now and I'm not wearing a hat, they're like, wow, that NeoGraft really works. It really does. It's not gimmicky. It's all just straight getting your hair back. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com. Get that free first appointment, which normally costs $150. See if the NeoGraft might be right for you right now.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, text line, tell me to chill out. I just get so bothered by the Maldi Yiner discord. I'm sorry. Space City Sports says Yiner is second in the with the Astros and RBIs. I didn't realize that. Yiner Diaz is second on the Astros and RBIs. You realize that? He's behind Tucker. It's tight. It's a tight race for second. But Tucker's at 39. Jordan? Yiner's at 23. Jordan's at 22.
Okay.
Bregman, Myers, Pena at 21, and Altuve's at 20. That's wild. I didn't realize he was second.
Because remember, he was struggling mightily no matter when he was hitting really well early in the season. He was struggling with runners in scoring position. We were talking about the fact that as good and confident as he was early in the season, that when he had runner, the whole team was, obviously, but with runners in scoring position, it was a different story. For him to have the RBIs, that's, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's good. That's good, because Yiner kind of struggles, I think, in RBI situations. This would tell you that he doesn't. This would argue and say that he's actually good in some RBI situations. Maybe he should be batting fourth, not third, or not Bregman, I should say. 713-780-ESPN. So Bill Barnwell today of ESPN, he posted this the story. It's a superlative for every NFL team, and he had a superlative for each team. For the Texans, he said, most likely team to petition to play with a second football. We all know why. Three receivers, Dalton Schultz, you still have Skowronek, you have Noah Brown, you have Mixon. Like, there's a lot of mouths to feed on this Houston Texans offense, which is cool. It's great. That's a good problem to have, to, you know, to be a team that has a lot of offensive weapons. Well, he also suggested in this little write-up that he believes that the team is going to have a surprise from the receiver room that fails to live up to expectations. So he believes, because there's so many mouths to feed, that there's going to be a receiver, whether it's Nico Tank, you know, Stephon Diggs, I don't think you could say Noah Brown in this conversation, that someone's not going to live up to those expectations. This was prior to Nico Collins signing his big deal today, $72 million plus for 3 years, the extension. So which receiver would you say, if you had to pick one, you had to pick one of these guys that's going to fail to live up to the expectations of what is expected of them in 2024, which receiver would you pick?
I think, to me, it's Stephon Diggs. And I think because of the fact that there's a familiarity already with Tank and with Nico, with CJ. And I think Stephon Diggs is betting on Stephon Diggs. I think Stephon Diggs is expecting, well, first of all, he's going to be hoping and really looking to put up the kind of numbers that gets him paid going into a free agency at the end of the year. I think that the fact is that in this offense, because of all the weapons, because the ball's going to be spread out so much, we've already had discussions on this show about the fact that his numbers might not be anywhere near a wide receiver, one type receiver, but that's not going to be his fault. It's going to be more a product of the system of having so much talent and the ball to be spread around that they're going to take what the defense gives them. That's great for the team, but is that going to be great for Diggs? And then how does he handle it? That's why I think that from just strictly looking at it from results based on numbers, I think the one guy that fits that kind of that criteria would be, to me, Stephon Diggs.
Yes, Diggs would be my answer, too. And it's probably in the, like, if you had to pick one, it's probably in your best interest if it is Diggs. Like, it can't be Nico now. If it's Nico now, it's a bad contract. If Nico's the one that doesn't get to expectations and Diggs does and Tank does and, you know, Schultz, maybe Schultz isn't in this conversation because he's not technically a wide receiver. But if Nico is your number three receiver, this wasn't a good deal. Like, Nico's going to have to be a guy, and maybe your number one receiver has 100 catches, 1,200 yards, and your number two receiver has 80 catches, 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns. Like, that's fine. But if you don't live up to the expectation after signing that deal, then it doesn't look like a good contract. Tank's expectations, I imagine, are pretty high. He's your cheapest receiver because he's still in the second year of his rookie deal. Didn't do the extension like Nico has attached to his name. Stephon Diggs, you know, they tore up the deal. They put it in a one-year contract. I would go Diggs as well as my answer. The one that would be the most disappointing would be Nico, quite frankly. Because now you're like, if Diggs is outperforming Nico, well, he's probably leaving as a free agent. If Tank's outperforming Nico, that's kind of good because he's a rookie or he's on a rookie deal in only a year or two. But Nico would be worst case scenario here. 713-780-ESPN. If Diggs gets less than 1,000 yards this season, would it be considered unproductive? 3312 ask.
Again, I think individually from his perspective, yes. I think that as it relates to the overall Texans offense, not necessarily. It depends because if everybody stays healthy and there's only one football to go around, some guys might not be putting up the individual numbers, but it might be the benefit of the overall offense. So I think if he – maybe 900 is a little light, but I think that, again, you shouldn't have wide receiver one expectations for Steph Diggs. He the problem might be that he does.
Context matters, I think, here too, right? Like if Diggs is like – if he's productive, let's say he has a few games sprinkled in where he goes nuts, 7 catches, 100 yards, a touchdown or two, and then the other games he's not getting the production – but he's getting attention from defenses. It's like, okay, cool. You're opening up things for other people. So I think the context matters here. I'm not going to write that off and say that if he goes under 1,000 that it's unproductive, especially because with the other mouse to feed. Like if he has 900, Nico has 1,500, and Tank has 1,200, that's unproductive? No, that's not unproductive. And what if his 900 yards comes with 10 touchdowns?
Right.
And he's the red zone threat. Yep. So like the total body of the context matters here. So I wouldn't write that off as the only thing that would lead to an unproductive season. Ocho, my cousin predicts the Texans will be the greatest show on turf 2.0. I said that's fine as long as Diggs is Isaac Bruce and not Torrey Holt, saying that Diggs is the number one, not the number two. Otherwise, Diggs might still be a malcontent in his contract year.
I think you got three guys that are capable of being a wide receiver one type in an offense. But I think that the beauty of it is that you have so many interchangeable pieces and parts that can do so much for you. And to give Bobby Slowick this many weapons to work with and CJ can only be a benefit to the overall offense. I don't think that in this specific offense, anybody's going to be the wide receiver one. I don't think that it matters. I think that what matters is...
Does it matter if Nico's not? That's seventh highest AAV in the NFL?
I don't think they think that. I think that they think that they locked up a guy that's going to be one of the guys in their receiver room for the foreseeable future. And again, the same way that we're talking about this as it relates to Diggs now, I don't think it should unfairly, he's going to get scrutiny if they lose and he got that big money and he's not putting up those type of numbers. But I think realistically, when you look at what they have in terms of systematically what Slowick's going to do, move the ball around, and like you said, we know how the NFL works. If Diggs does have one of those days where he goes off for 7 catches and 100-some yards and a couple of touchdowns, the following week, the defenses that you're playing is going to be – the focal point is going to be Diggs, which means, logically, they're going to spread the ball around to other guys. So it's going to be an ebb and flow for all these guys. The problem is that contracts matter, individual stats matter, and they're going to be weighed into it. And they're going to be scrutinized because of it.
6761, Tank the Twig. Love the guy, but prove it to me you can stay healthy at that size.
Just don't let him block.
Yeah. I think it's a fair text, even though I'm incredibly biased to go Cougs. But it's a fair text. Now, the Texans have to be smarter with his usage. Because it's a fair text, we all know that his size does make him prone to some injury. And yes, it was a fluke injury. The lineman rolls up on him. But where is a lineman going to roll up on a player? I promise you that a lineman's not going to roll up on a guy if he's out in the boundaries or if he's 10 yards downfield. Where is it more likely to get rolled up on? In the box. Let's keep Tank out of the box on running plays. Let's be a little bit smarter on his usage. I used to be bullish on the idea of him in the kick game and the return game. Let's get out of that logic too. Like, let's minimize the opportunity for Tank to get hurt. We have the Yordan rules. Let's have the Tank rules. Because yes, his size is his size. Yes, he got rolled up on by a big offensive lineman last year and broke his fibula. Yes, those things are true. Yes, there's not a long history of players his size being healthy long term in the NFL or playing in the NFL ever. So let's be smart about his usage and where he's at on the football field.
Yeah, it's the same way, vice versa, but it's the same way you're never going to want to see a fullback or a lineman split out wide in a wide receiver position. You don't want to see a very speedy and very frail, I won't say, but very light-weighted, to use the best term possible, a light-weighted receiver of 160 pounds.
It's a cruiserweight.
Yet you're not going to put him at the end of the line of scrimmage on a goal line play and expect him to block. And if you do, it's not intelligent. There are other guys that can fill that role, that can do that small part of what a receiver's supposed to do when he is such a big part of creating chunk plays and touchdowns. You just don't do it. You hope they learn the lesson. You realize you've got a deeper wide receiver room, too, to have other guys to fill that role. But that's just not smart football.
713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We didn't do a show yesterday because it was Memorial Day. Thanks to those who sacrificed for our freedom. Certainly appreciate that. Thankful for that. But because we didn't have a show yesterday, we didn't have a Mailbag Monday. So we're going to do a Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday. What are your questions for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday with the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a word right now for mybookie.ag. It's the only place I tell you to go when you want to put some money down on a game or maybe get your gambling fix on, because of the fact that they always have live dealers standing by to do casino games for you, like poker and blackjack. So you can always gamble any hour of the day or night, no matter if there are games going on or not. Their website also does that as well. The main thing I also tell you is, whether you're betting on games or playing some poker or doing some casino games, always remember our promo code, which is BET975. When you use that promo code, you're going to get extra added bonuses. If you've never signed up on mybookie.ag before and you sign up for the first time, you use our promo code, you get extra cash in your account that is accessible and usable immediately. And with more money in your account, there's more games to bet on or more games to get in on from a casino perspective, and obviously more chances you can win. The same thing with the finals coming around the corner and all the NBA games heating up, baseball getting better and better by the day, and all the different sports that are going on, like golf and UFC. You can always bet at mybookie.ag, and they've always got live odds. They've got the in-game props. They've got all the different bets that are going on as the game is going on, and you can follow them right there at mybookie.ag. It's a fantastic place to go, and for you that have already had an account, there's a reload bonus as well, too. Just always remember our promo code BET975, and always remember the one place I tell you to go, because it's the only place I tell you to go. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag and the promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5.
Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
A Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday? What is this? What is your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. My question for you, Blankers.
Yes.
What's wrong with a spot is lineup? At Jeremy Branham on Twitter. Astros lineup is out today.
Please tell me that Jose Abreu's not in it.
Oh, he's in it. He's in it. Guess where he's
not in the four spot.
No, he's not in the four spot.
Okay, good. He's in the eighth spot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is he playing a position or is he DHing?
He's DH.
No, he's playing first. So he can jump out of the way of another hard ground ball. Altuve, Tucker, Yordan in left. That's good for you. Pena at short, Bregman at third. I haven't looked in a while.
Because I know TK hasn't been was trending last well. Night that it's been like the last 2 weeks he hasn't
Yeah, it hadn't been trending well for you. Back-to-back games in left. Yeah, I mean, we can look it up real quick. I don't know. We'll look it up later. I don't think many people care about it.
So Tucker's still in the two hole?
Yeah, Altuve, Tucker, Yordan in left. Pena, Bregman, Myers. Singleton DHs, Abreu, Yiner. Which, Abreu, I mean, Singleton needs to be in the lineup against Castillo. You need a lefty. Like, Castillo okay. dominates righties. So Singleton needed to be in the lineup. Abreu didn't need to be in the lineup.
Okay, but if they're both in it, then why can't we flip-flop them and have the better first baseman defensively play first base?
I think they're both bad defensively, actually.
But I think if you got the big mountain of a man that would have gotten, in my opinion, would have gotten in front of that baseball, as opposed to a guy that struggled defensively all year, both can hit. Let John Singleton play first base.
Well, I don't know. I would question that both can't hit. Oh, you're saying they can both be in the lineup?
Yeah.
I thought you meant the ability to hit.
Be in the lineup, of the two guys right now, I'd play Singleton at first base.
I took that as you meant, like, they have the ability to hit, like, and hit well, and one certainly does not. The other does kind of. And then Yiner catches and bats ninth. I think it might be the first time all year that Yiner bats ninth.
I think that's as low as he's been.
Second leader in RBIs, batting ninth for the Stros. Yeah, so what's wrong with the spotter's lineup? Abreu playing first defensively. Yeah. Chaz, it's weird that, like, I thought Abreu's return to the lineup was going to impact Singleton. I didn't think it was going to impact Chaz McCormick. Chaz McCormick has not played in three games now. He has not played in this series. And it also impacts Mauricio Dubon. Like, I didn't expect that. And I didn't expect Jose Abreu to be starting every single day either.
I really think that from the perspective, too, when you're talking about Loperfido, it makes all the sense in the world now that he was the guy to go down. Because if Chaz is struggling to find ABs and spots in the lineup, the last thing you want is your young guy that's coming up to just sit there on the bench every day trying to get ABs in the batting cages and underneath. Get him every day at bats and keep him playing first base. And Chaz is the odd man out right now.
He's the odd man out. I didn't expect that to happen.
That's because Jake's been hitting his tail off.
Yep. So, all right, what's your question for the Bees? Mailbag Monday on Tuesday. Someone X'd earlier, saved it for this segment. Did you ever have an experience with Bill Walton?
Yeah.
What happened?
I've had a few. The one that I recall, my mentor was Steve Snapper Jones. And Steve Snapper Jones, when I was an intern with Portland, took me under his wing, one of the greatest dudes I've ever met in my life. And he and Walton did games with Costas on NBC. And that was 95 when we were in the chase for the second ring. We're in San Antonio. And Bill Walton was just killing Dream. And I came flying out of the truck at halftime, and I was hell-bent to get Walton and ask him what the hell he was talking about, because he was just throwing out all this outlandish BS, trying to be critical of Hakeem Olajuwon. And Snap just grabbed me by the back of the neck, and he's like, kid, just come here right now. And he always called me, and I'm like, what do you mean, come here right now? He goes, before you do something stupid, he goes, realize what Walton is. Walton is a walking, talking firestorm, and he just loves stirring people up. He loves Dream, but he just wants to say the things that are going to get people's ire. Well before the internet and all the other things, he wanted to be the guy that really got people talking and coming at him because he enjoyed it. And Steve saved me from going out on the courtside and ripping into him. And lo and behold, Dream played his tail off anyway. And after the game of snapping his way, just went, see, kid, I told you. He's a hell of a player, and Walton does it on purpose.
You're trying to control the narrative like Dubai's trying to control the clouds.
No, I'm trying to say that people at that point when they did broadcasting were supposed to tell the truth and be honest. We know that's changed over the years.
That's a good one. I never had the pleasure of meeting Bill Walton. I went and listened to a bunch of his highlights this morning because rest in peace, Bill. He's got so many great one-liners.
He was so quirky, too.
Oh, yeah.
He could take one of those boring Pac-12 games and just go completely off the rails.
Conference of Champions.
Throw it down, big man. The freaking Billis was in tears.
Yeah.
Every interview. I didn't realize they were close.
I knew that they were. I mean, obviously they know each other. I didn't realize they were that tight.
Well, I forgot Billis is from California. And he said he grew up watching Walton and that they got to be friends because of ESPN and that Walton would intentionally call him Jake because he knew it wasn't his name and that they just hit it off.
Yeah, that's we lost a basketball legend and I mean very fun, entertaining color commentary.
One, way too soon, and two, the fact that he hid the cancer. I don't think
I didn't
only
know.
His closest of close knew that he was dealing with it.
It's honorable. In honor of today's National Hamburger Day, I don't know if you knew that or not. In honor of National Hamburger Day, what's your favorite hamburger? Fast food, fast casual, and then like an outside-the-box one. It's a hot take.
I will go, like, what's my favorite fast food burger?
Best fast food burger.
Fast food burger, and we always go into what's fast food. Of the big chain burger chains, I would say Burger King tastes the best. The Charbroiled, to me, tastes way better than McDonald's. Or the only thing, Whataburger I love as well, but I think just from the taste of the burger itself, I'll go Burger King. Don't come at me because I love Whataburger.
Have it your way.
Burger
King over Whataburger? That is the hottest take you've ever had.
I'm saying the best taste. Like the taste of the meat itself.
You're saying the Burger King burger is better than the Whataburger burger.
If I have my choice between the two, I'm going to take a Whataburger double with cheese and load it up.
Then why did you say Burger King?
Because I think the flavor of just the meat itself is not, it's not made on, what do you call it, your flat iron grill?
I think it probably is. It's probably made there.
Broiled
on a flat iron grill.
I prefer Burger King broiling it on a actual charbroil.
Why can't a charbroil be flat?
Because it leaves the grids on the burger.
I'm messing with you. It sounds like you said Burger King is better than Whataburger.
I knew you were going to try and stir up controversy for me. That's fine. I'm a big fan of Whataburger, but Fuddruckers to me.
You're trying to duck the Whataburger enthusiast is what you're trying to do.
The Fuddruckers half pound, that would constitute not fast food. That would be the in between, right? What'd you call it?
Fast casual. Fast casual. So like somebody that doesn't have like a drive through per se.
The Fuddruckers.
Fuddruckers solid.
Half pound, loaded up however you want with the cheese and all that works is great. And then I guess I don't know what my actual sit down burger place would be.
No, it's just outside the box one. Oh, okay. Like one that's a
so
hot take.
So the outside
take.
The box
like
our to me hole is back in the home wall. In Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It was actually based off of what Big Al's was on Happy Days in the sitcom. It's called Cops. It's still open. They make fresh ice cream every day. And their burgers were literally the size of a pancake.
Oh, that sounds
for
great.
For a buck.
That sounds so good.
And we used to go there for lunch in high school almost every day.
Langford Grocers like that. The big old pancake-style hamburger patty. Yep. I need to get over there this summer. Keith says BK Burger. Wow.
Keith from L.A., of course. He's looking
no,
at
No, it was Keith. It was the Keith that likes the old players.
Yeah.
That Keith. Different Keith. Not Keith. My favorite fast burger is Culver's. Unbelievable. Culver's is fantastic. My favorite fast casual is Jax's Grill. Their burgers are elite. And I'm not just saying that. They are fantastic. And then outside the box, hole in the wall, Pete's Burger and Porter. Next to the railroad on Loop 394?
So what you're saying, the moral of that story is you think Culver's is better than Whataburger.
Yeah, I do. Their hamburger. Not as an establishment, because Whataburger has a good menu that you can go throughout the day. Yeah. Taquitos, breakfast on a bun. Like, if I had to pick one place to eat it the rest of my life, I'm taking Whataburger, because they have more variety. It's not a cover, it's a fact. If you
the same thing you did to me, saying I said Burger King was better than Whataburger.
But I'm giving you a real honest answer. Whereas you said you like Burger King's burgers better, but you like Whataburger better.
The taste I don't like the Whopper and all the fixins and all that sauces and stuff. I like a Whataburger double, but in terms of just the taste and the flavor of the meat itself, I like Burger King and the charbroil.
Okay. Culver's hamburger is my favorite fast food burger. In-N-Out second. Whataburger's third. There, I said it. I already said my fast casual. Jax's is in the outside the box. Pete's and Porter's fantastic. I don't love their fries, but their hamburger itself is fantastic. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Question for the Bees. Get rid of one. Pizza, CJ Stroud, outdoor grills.
Say pizza?
Pizza, CJ Stroud, or all outdoor grills?
I'll get rid of an outdoor grill.
I'm getting rid of pizza there. Oh, this guy said Uncle Tony's. I've been to Uncle Tony's. Uncle Tony's is solid. It's right off Rayford. There might be more than one. He said Uncle Tony's in the Woodlands. I've been to the one on Rayford.
Woodlands, yeah.
If Joel had his Tony brothers, he'd say BK. this guy already asked that question. The taco truck around the corner from my shop makes the best burgers?
A taco truck makes burgers in itself is kind of weird.
When in Rome. Loop 494. I said 394. I screwed that up. I'm bad with roads. I have sense of direction. I don't need to know road names. I said that to my wife the other day. What's that?
But you're a numbers guy.
I'm a jack of all trades. This guy says BK Texas Double Whopper with jalapenos. The Texas Double Whopper with jalapenos is very good. I will admit that.
See, I'm not a big jalapenos guy.
Oh, you need a little pica. Beyond Burger in Texas City. Is it actually a burger, though, or is that like a bean patty?
You and I go back and forth on this one, but I really think Bex Prime makes a good burger.
I like Bex Prime. I have no problem with Bex Prime. I think that it's a little overrated. I don't think it's like in the elite category. I think it's good. I enjoy it. I go there. I like it. I don't think it's like the best.
I'm big on the whole char grill.
Okay, I like charcoal burger. That's fine. Los Tios has a great burger. All right. That's enough for our Mailbag Monday. I'm hungry now.
I want
a burger.
Too.
I might have a burger on the way. I'm a very impressionable young man. All right, what's the car wreck of the day? 713-780-ESPN. What are you nominating for car wreck of the day? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's that time of year. You're wasting your valuable time dealing with your yard. You had these storms come through the area today. Hopefully everybody's safe. Hope that you're okay. You might have had plans to mow the grass when you got home today. It ain't happening now with all the rain that came through. So your lawn's going to be messed up for the next week or so. It's going to be high grass, or maybe you mow it whenever it's wet. It's going to leave those wheel marks in the yard. It's terrible. You don't have to deal with that if you have sin lawn. You don't have to deal with the weeds, the dead spots, the chores that you don't want to put up with whenever it's rainy and wet. Well, stop doing it. Sin lawn's here so you can get your weekends back or your evenings back. Sin lawn's the evolution story of the AstroTurf. Of course, the AstroTurf, made popular by the Astrodome. And now Sinlawn, S-Y-N, Sinlawn, wants to improve your lifestyle. They want you to stop mowing, stop pulling weeds, stop throwing money into this ugly yard that you're embarrassed of people seeing. Sinlawn artificial grass is the best on the market. Why? Well, Sinlawn's going to control the process from yarn to yard, and it all starts with quality top-shelf products that are made in the USA. They're fully insured, fully bonded. Sinlawn has their own in-house crews. You don't have to contract anything out, and Sinlawn backs it up with their lifetime warranty. Sinlawn's number one priority is making their customers happy. So that's all the red tape. You got it covered with the best products, fully insured, fully bonded, the lifetime warranty. But how is it going to make your life better? You're going to have the perfect yard year-round from January 1st to December 31st, your yard's going to be elite. It's going to be great, perfect. And it's perfect for you, whether it's your patio. Maybe you have some kids. Maybe they're out there playing in the rain. They're playing in the mud. They're tracking all that mud inside. It's annoying. You have to clean. You have to work harder. Well, get Sinlawn turf back there. You don't have to worry about it. Your pets do the same thing. If you have Sinlawn back there, you don't have to worry about it. Maybe you're a golfer. Maybe you want a putting green in the corner of your yard. That's fun. You can do that with Sinlawn. They have it perfectly landscaped around pools. I've seen it done with the pavers. It looks beautiful. You need to try Sinlawn. Just give them a call. Just give them a call. Go online, 975sinlawn.com. Learn more about it. Figure out the cost. Get an estimate. And at least have your options. Sinlawn is great. 975sinlawn.com. That's 975sinlawn.com. 975sinlawn.com to get started on the yard of your dream. Sinlawn, artificial grass never looked more natural.
ESPN 97.5.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That's Hunter Brown's music. Hunter Brown going tonight against Seattle. Hunter Brown saying, I added that sinker whenever I faced Seattle that last time. Hunter Brown in those four games, been pretty good. 2 runs, 4 1/3 against Seattle. 1 run, 5 innings against Detroit. 4 runs, 5 innings against Milwaukee. 2 runs, 6 innings against the Angels. What are we getting from Hunter Brown tonight at Seattle?
My blank man simulator is processing right now and is giving you 5 2/3, 4 runs.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Really?
Yeah, I'll take it. I think you can. I mean, you're facing Luis Castillo.
I was going to say, Castillo is not the guy that you want to be chasing four. You had a hard time chasing three last night against their worst pitcher.
Yeah, I'll take this. I'll take it. I'm not confident it's going to give me the victory, but I'll take it for what Hunter Brown has been this year. Although Hunter Brown's been better in his last four. Since adding that sinker, we rattled off the game logs there. 3.98 ERA in those last four games. So a better version of Hunter Brown. Hopefully that continues
today. You
know
what that means? Put that stupid knuckle curveball thing away for good.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. All right, let's get to our car wreck of the day.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The ball's coming through.
I'll give you a f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
All right, what do you nominate for our car wreck of the day?
I'm going to start with Karl-Anthony Towns, who has not been exactly stellar in the playoffs, and then followed it up by saying, I don't understand it. I'm putting up 1,500 shots a day, and I've been making and all this other stuff. I call BS. There's no freaking way, and I'm glad he got called out for it over the weekend. Because you're not putting up 1,500 shots a day. And even if you were, you need to be doing more for your squad.
I think he could put up 1,500 shots a day. I think it's plausible.
Now, on an NBA schedule, I don't.
Now, during the year, I don't. That's where I agree with you on the BS. But, like, in the offseason, I think you should be putting up 1,500 shots a day.
And that's the other thing. And in the most guys aren't. In the offseason, they're vacation.
Let's say you have 2-3-hour sessions of shooting. Like, you work out in the morning, you get 3-hour shoot in. You go eat lunch, come back for another, 3-hour shoot. So that's 6 hours. 1,500 shots, 6 hours. That's only 250 shots an hour. You can get up 1,500 shots in a day. I would say most really good shooters are shooting 1,500 times a day during the offseason. Regular season in the playoffs, I don't think they want him shooting this much. I think it'd be too exhausting.
I think that the thought of it was something that he stayed away from. I don't think that even if he could, he would do it.
You don't think he's doing it in the offseason?
I do not at all.
I mean, to be as good a shooter as he is, I think he's shooting 1,500 shots a day during the offseason.
I don't.
I don't know, man.
Jeremy, it's a lot.
I mean, not really in the offseason. It's your job.
You just see it all the time.
To be a 40% career three-point shooter, I think he's shooting 1,500 shots a day in the offseason.
God-given ability to shoot the basketball with
talent.
You still
have to hone your craft.
You can still do that, but 1,500 shots is a lot.
Not in the offseason?
I think it is.
How many shots can you put up in an hour?
I don't know in an hour. I know I've seen guys in routines and things that they do. I think Ray Allen is one of the best, most prepared players I've ever seen in my life. And I don't think Ray Allen put up 1,500 shots.
In the offseason?
In the offseason, he was golfing a lot.
Well, it sounds like he was lazy. He could have been a better three-point shooter. Maybe the greatest of all time.
Except Steph.
I'm gonna nominate Major League Baseball, forcing the legend Angel Hernandez out of baseball. They forced him into this early retirement. They paid him to retire. They paid him to drop the lawsuit. This is another move by Robert Manfred to take a legend out of our game and a legend out of our game too soon. They paid him money to go away. Astros should do that with Jose Abreu.
Did they really do that?
They gave him a big settlement to retire.
That's fantastic.
They gave him retirement money.
It obviously should have happened a long, long time ago, but the fact that we can finally stop seeing the ridiculous highlights of awful calls is fantastic. There's still a couple guys that need to be weeded out.
Yeah. The Detective's an American Nightmare. It's a Netflix documentary I just finished yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story. I won't get into the details, but it's a crazy story. But they basically didn't believe a woman on this crazy story about how she was assaulted, and they should have. Because her crazy story was actually right, and the detective—it was a long time ago, but
wow.
Yeah, America—it's worth the watch. You're gonna watch it? It's only three episodes.
Maybe
it's on Netflix. Check it out, American Nightmare.
We have Netflix, right?
Yeah, American Nightmare. Check it out. It's an unbelievable story. All right, what's gonna win here? Carl Anthony
Austin,
or Angel Hernandez?
You call it Austin.
How about we nominate Austin for wearing a Cleveland Browns hat?
And how about we nominate the fact that Austin isn't listening?
And it's his last day with us, I think, right?
Yeah.
All right, Austin, that's our parting gift to you. You're the winner of the car wreck of the day because you're wearing that awful Cleveland Browns hat. Congratulations, Austin.
You weren't listening when we were talking to you.
But thank you for all the
way
hard
to be
work.
Brian,
we
on
appreciate
your way out.
You being here the last few days. He's Blankers on Brian. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Goodbye.
ESPN 97.5.